Welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast. Every week, we dive deep with economic development professionals on leadership and other issues challenging our industry. Our goal is to equip listeners with the knowledge to grow their impact and influence. You are America's Jobs Team, and when you get stronger, communities thrive. On today's podcast, Ron Kitchens talks with Bethany Miller, who is the Vice President of Regional Economic Development at the Greater Houston Partnership. Bethany leads on business attraction, retention, and expansion efforts, and she also provides guidance on all economic development projects in support of the mission to make Houston the world's best place to live, work, and build a business. During today's interview, Ron and Bethany dive deep into the impact and influence and the history of how Houston became the country's most diverse city and the effect that it has had on economic development and the quality of life there. Let's tune in to listen to more.
Thank you for joining us to the America's Jobs Team podcast. We're so lucky to have Bethany Miller here. Bethany is the Vice President, make sure I get this right, of Regional Economic Development at the Greater Houston Partnership, an organization that if you don't know, shame on you. It's one of America's great economic development groups, the history of amazing leaders who both led in that organization and gone on to lead some really great places. So I think we'll get some really cool insight today. So Bethany, first, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited about this, and hopefully what I can offer is helpful to somebody.
So full disclosure, Bethany and I serve on the board of the IEDC, the International Economic Development Council, together, which means we've been doing a lot of Zoom calls together. We haven't been in the same room since February.
For months.
Yeah, but it's so glad to be here online with you today. So a lot of economic developers fall into economic development. It's like, yeah, well, I was going to be a Chris Camacho, who I was talking with last week. Chris is a professional soccer player, and then transitioned into economic development. So what's your origin story? How'd you get here?
Well, I am a proud Buckeye. I went to Ohio State, and my undergrad advisor was a friend of the family. And it was like the last quarter, and I was walking across the Oval and happened to bump into him. And I was just about to get my degree in sociology. And he said, what are your plans for after you graduate with your bachelor's? And I said, well, I really don't know. I was getting ready to go on study abroad. And he said, well, listen, I think that you should look into the School of City and Regional Planning here at Ohio State. I think you'd be a great planner. It's multidisciplinary work. And I think that would keep you really excited and engaged. And so I said, okay, I'll give it a try. And so I applied for graduate school and got in. And at Ohio State at the time, if you had an internship that was related to the field of planning or economic development, then they would waive your tuition. So I quickly secured an internship with the city of Gahanna, which is an outer ring suburb of Columbus, and just happened to work really closely to the director, of economic development. Her name was Sadiqa White, and she did all of the economic development work for the office. None of the planning work that fell to the assistant director. And as a result, I was really quickly sort of sucked into the world of economic development. I've never looked back. I don't think I would be a good planner. And I'm so happy that that's the way that things worked out for me. So I did very much fall into this career path.
That's awesome. That's, we hear a lot of folks that, get bad career advice in college. So it was nice that you had somebody who recognized that spark of greatness and fanned that flame.
Well, I think that he wanted to save me from myself, thinking that I could just leave school with a sociology degree and be a major success. Maybe he saw some flaw in that planning. So,
Well, you would have been a major success at whatever you did, but I'm glad it's economic development. Yeah. So 2020 is nuts year for all of us. And, we've seen pandemic changing our economies and jobs and our workplaces, and it's affected everyone we know. Racial and social unrest that, depending on what part of the country you're in, has manifested itself in lots of different ways. How is that? How has this all affected your leadership, being tenured in the profession, but new in an organization? It's also, you know, tough. How's it impacted you?
Well, I'm really fortunate to be with an organization that wants to take an inward look at how we're, you know, putting ourselves forward as an equitable chamber of commerce, and you know, doing our work as equitably as possible. And so that trickles down to all of the divisions that the partnership has in place, to include economic development. And so it's been a really empowering time to look at the work that we're doing on a daily basis and think about how we can adjust our efforts to include all of the people in the Houston community. So just ensuring that the work that we're doing around economic development is truly serving the community and all of its people. And so it's been exciting to be a part of that. And I guess because I'm so new to the partnership, if I throw an off the wall idea out onto the table, I'm still in that grace period. And so folks aren't shaming me or, you know, expecting something different from me at this point. And so I feel like there's a lot of flexibility and openness for me to share my ideas. And
kind of like the there's no dumb questions from the new kid.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, one of those questions, I think, you know, this is all economic developers listening to us. One of the questions I think I struggle with, I hear people struggle with, is this idea of equitable and equity and how we of defining what that means. Mm-hmm. And then having agreement around what that means and then being able to put a plan together around it. And that's one of the things that, you know, we've talked that worry me, that it's so hard to define. If we don't get good starting points, then our outcomes aren't going to be meaningful, and it's too important. And so help me think through how, you know, somebody in their 50s who's white, who's always, you know, I came from a community, we have Corpus Christi down the road from Houston, 64%. People of color, and, you know, in a community now that's about 25% people of color, but it's not really something I own. You know, I grew up in a place where there was one person of color in my hometown. So understanding what equitable means without feeling threatened by that, I think, is one of those really, really hard things. And so, do you have advice on how we have these conversations?
Well, advice on how we have the conversations. I mean, I think one of the hardest things to do, no matter what the subject matter is when there's an opportunity to look at ourselves first and kind of see, take an honest assessment of where we stand, what our thoughts and feelings are. I think I would just say, don't be afraid to make a space for the Black and Brown people at the table. You know, Houston is the most diverse city in the nation. And oftentimes when we're talking to companies about location there, we play up that diversity piece because it's so powerful when you think about how to solve problems in the workspace with your technology, with your service, or with your product. And those efforts only become strengthened when you have people at the table who come from all different walks of life, who come from different experiences and backgrounds and can lend different insights to the problem solving process. And so in the same way that a company can be strengthened by having people from multiple backgrounds at the table, our work, our growth, our output, the efforts that we make can also be strengthened because we're having a fuller, deeper, more encompassing conversation. And I think that we all want to be better. We want to do the best that we can. And so when you think about inclusiveness from that perspective.
Inclusivity.
This is like one of my team meetings on Zoom where I'm like, is that a word? I mean, like when you think about including people from all different walks of life and backgrounds in the discussion, providing them all a seat at the table, you know, that just puts us in a better position as individuals. So I think it's something not to be afraid of. Maybe it's new, maybe it's different, but I think it's also necessary if we want to strive to be our best.
Yeah, and I think I really do think you hit the nail on the head. And this idea that we've got to create a place where fear doesn't have a home, where you can have a conversation and admit your ignorance, because ignorance is the enemy.
Yeah.
So we admit it if we pull back those curtains on it and say, listen, I don't know what we're talking about. I don't know how we're going to solve this. And I'm okay living in the vulnerability. I'm not okay staying in the place.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people are struggling with. But, you know, our own organization, we had a candidate not long ago that we recruited, and they didn't take the job because there were too many women. And because our 25 people, 22 of them are women. And all leadership. I'm the only person in the organization. Only leader in the senior leader in the organization is not a woman. And it was, they're like, I don't know how to operate in that environment. And at this point, I don't want to have to learn that. And it was one of those striking things that I thought, if that's the scariest thing in your life, you're living a pretty charmed life. And these aren't really scary women.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, and at the end of the day, you probably don't really want that person on your team anyway. So good for that guy for being able to look at himself in that circumstance.
Yep, well, I think that's right. So you said something there that I think most people would be shocked by, that Houston is the most diverse city in America.
Yeah.
And I know that from being a Texan, but to understand how wise is Houston, this kind of microcosm of the United Nations.
Yeah. How wise is it, or why is it?
Why is it? How did Houston get there? I mean, people, I think South Texas, and they assume Houston is a Hispanic city.
Yeah.
When in fact, it has a very long history of African-American leaders and big organizations and corporations. And then the Vietnamese that came after the war brought this incredible food culture, you know, the mixing pot of Houston's proximity to Louisiana also brings culture. And so how did it get there, and why does it work so well?
So 1 in 4 Houstonians is foreign born. So that's 25% of our population. We have 89 foreign consulates. And, you know, because of the presence of that international, you know, of those international governments, there are lots of corporations that follow. So you have people coming into Houston to work for companies that have a U.S. Location. You have people who are returning from military service abroad and end up locating in Houston. And, you know, military come from all different backgrounds. Like you said, there's this huge Vietnamese population. We're really well connected to the rest of the globe. It's easy to get to Mexico and to South America and to all of these other nations. And I think one of the hidden secrets about Houston is that there's also a really great quality of life. So it's an affordable place to live. The cost of living is below the national average. And so when you think about this mixing of all of these different cultures and ethnicities, and you think about the access to the rest of the country and the rest of the globe, and you think about the fact that you can eat all this great food that comes from all over the place and, you know, go to a professional sports game that might be soccer or baseball or basketball or football. And then there's this price point that's below average for the nation. I mean, it's almost like, why would you want to go someplace else? You know, the weather is great for a lot of the year, and it's just a fun place to be. And it's one of the hidden gems of the country. So I like it.
It's truly a great city.
Yeah.
What role, you talked about the college professor early on, but what role of mentors played in your career advancement, in your career? And then what obligation do you feel back to be a mentor?
I mean, mentors have meant everything to me. They've taught me how to dress, how to conduct myself in the workplace. I mean, I think that sometimes that gets overlooked. But at the same time, we have this conversation about soft skills and the lack thereof, and like this younger population that's entering the workforce. I don't think I was completely lacking in soft skills, but, you know, I still needed someone to say to me when I was just entering economic development as an intern for the first time, like, this is the way that you conduct yourself in the office. And here's how you answer a question from a citizen when you don't know the answer to the question. You know, just like these little things. And also mentors have given me the space to try out new ideas professionally, to think about what I think would be a game-changing approach to solving a problem around recruitment or retention or what have you. And so, you know, I've just been so pleased to have a few people who have been in my corner and who have believed in me and encouraged me and given me the space to play and experiment over the years. And I'm hopeful that I can provide some of the same guidance, even just a little bit of the same amount of guidance to some of the younger professionals who work on my team. I want to encourage people to explore their thinking and share their ideas and speak up in a meeting, you know, even if it's just one or two little points, maybe something that I forgot or someone else on the team forgot to mention. I think it's important for folks to learn how to use their voices and to not back down from sharing an idea or making a suggestion. And, you know, hopefully someday someone will look back and say, I'm glad Bethany encouraged me. And it's part of why I am where I'm at today. So
I have no doubt that there are people today saying that. Mm-hmm. Let's assume a young leader, they're on your staff, or maybe one of the communities that you all serve outline. What's a way for them to address you, to ask for that mentoring, to ask for that encouragement, to say, hey, I'm ignorant. Ignorance is the enemy. How do I gain that knowledge? And how do they approach you? You know, I love the idea of a virtual board of directors where you've got people who know that they can kind of call and go, did you really just say that? But more importantly, to know that, hey, I know there are things I don't know. I know I'm dressing in a way that's inappropriate, but I don't have anybody around to tell me.
Yeah.
And I don't want to stay here. How do they reach out and have that conversation with you asking for help?
So I think that for me, one of the interesting things about operating in the space of COVID virtually is being able to see people in their homes dressed as people and not like in these formal spaces that maybe sort of inadvertently throw up a barrier between the executive and, you know, the manager or the director or whoever. And so I am just a person. I would welcome the chance to be able to share with someone my insights or answer questions for them. And I know how intimidating it can be to sometimes think, wow, I really admire that person professionally, but I just don't know how to approach them and start a conversation. So my answer is just, I guess, really simple. You know, remember that I'm a person. If it's me who you want to talk to, and just approach me. I mean, I'm totally cool. And
totally.
I just put my dogs out right before I came in here to talk with you all today. And I'm hoping that they don't start beating on the door sometime soon. You know, but I think that, like, just remembering that all of us are people, we're all human beings. None of us got to where we are overnight. I can remember thinking when I was an intern in Gahanna, I'd be in a meeting with Sadiqa and I would think, like, she is so smart. Like, how did she get to the point where she could just make this great suggestion in this meeting? And now that it's, you know, I'm 10 or 12 years removed from that, I'm like, well, she's had hundreds and hundreds of meetings with other smart people. And she's offered up ideas that probably weren't awesome all of the time, but it's been a process. And so, you know, yeah, I mean, I think I'm approachable, and I think most people are probably pretty approachable. And seeing folks on Zoom calls and t-shirts with their baseball caps on backwards, you know, has kind of like reminded me of that. And so I would just remind others that, you know, nothing special to it.
Now, no, I think that's great advice. And I, one of the tricks I use, because during all of this COVID stuff, I sit on the board of a number of private companies, and And so I thought, well, maybe, you know, it's time I want to get better at this. Maybe I'll add a different company. So I want to talk to people that know what I don't know. But I'll go find them on social media, LinkedIn or somewhere. And then I'll find who do they know. And I just want to find out that they're close to Sprints or as big a dorks as I am. And so, you know, oh, well, they're friends with that guy. I'm an upgrade. So, and because it is, we are just people trying to figure a way to get through it all and
Make
the world a little bit if we can. What's been the effect of 2020 and changing the world in economic development that you hope is permanent and that you can't wait to get back to normal?
Well, I hope that the disparities in how people have been affected by the coronavirus have really unveiled some truths about how our country is set up, that now the powers that be truly want to pay attention to. So corporations, economic development organizations, people who are influencers. Hopefully this has been a moment where folks can recognize that truly there are lots of inequities that are, you know, at work in this country, and that it's no good for anyone as long as they exist. And I'm hopeful that there will be some real change behind that. I do miss being in the office. I miss hosting companies for site visits. I miss being in the office for meetings and then snacking on leftover lunch for the rest of the day. I mean, like just little silly things. Like I had to go into my office a couple times in the last couple of months, and I hadn't been there since like March 12th. And my monitors, my computer monitors are so large and it's so quiet in my office. And it's just, I mean, it, you know, just being in that space is something that I miss. It's weird. The other day I was thinking, like, is this normal? Is it normal? Like, am I doing anything different now than I would be if we didn't have the pandemic? And then I had to say, like, yes, I wouldn't be locked in my apartment for, you know, 22 hours of the day or whatever it is. Like, everything's different. So I just, I want to get back to the point where we're truly in a collaborative space in person, in touch with each other and, you know, engaging companies like we used to pre-COVID.
Yep. No, I'm right there with you. So we're a pretty young organization. And so we have two moms on maternity leave now and one about to go. And I miss being there like in the first week, the babies, because our tradition is, you know, we're either coming over to see babies or they are kind of bringing babies to the office. And I miss holding them. I miss birthday cake.
Yeah.
You know, and those, and the leftovers, we don't even pretend. We just overorder for everything. We don't even pretend that people didn't eat it. We're overordering. That's how it is. But I miss that. But then I'm with you in that the scales have kind of been thrown back or thrown off some.
Yeah.
And the inequity of our economy is, and I don't quite, so one of the surprising things for me was the difference in the amount of cash reserves white businesses had to businesses of color and why the crisis was so much bigger for one group or the other. It just hadn't dawned on me. Just had never had that conversation. And so to better understand that, to better understand that we have made some great inroads and partnerships with organizations that existed, but we didn't need each other. Mm-hmm. So we didn't particularly partner well. Well, now we're working on, okay, how do we institutionalize partnerships, particularly those partnerships we've developed? We were very blessed that we were given a about 800, just a little over $8 million to give away to small businesses and to figure out a process that was equitable, that was fair, that took advantage of the knowledge we had, but then advantage of the sensitivities to, oh, here's why this is more important here than there. It's also the first time ever in my 30-year career that we had free money and that we had a mandate to give them the 30% of the money had to go to people of color, women, or veterans. And so, you know, of that, we had 2,200 applicants. We're going to end up with about 1,500 applicants receiving funding.
Wow.
And about 60% are women of color, women, people of color, veterans. Nice. And it has been empowering to see who these folks are, to see their finances, see how we can help. But it's also humbling to know that the work that was being done previous and had so little resources to do the work in those communities. So we're not going to go backwards. We're not going to assume, okay, it's everything's going to be right. At some point, we'll be back to 3% unemployment. And, you know, then it'll just, you know, our friend Quentin in New Orleans, you know, right when we first started this, Quentin wrote a blog that, you know, he was an economic developer and he believed in green power. And if we just got enough jobs and enough money for people, it would all take care of itself. And you know what? It didn't happen that
way. Yeah.
And I think this has been the economic developers around the country that I've had, you know, opportunities, same as you, I'm sure. We're a little scarred by what we weren't seeing.
Yeah.
And I think that's it's a pretty good thing to be in that role. And to be able to say, I'm going to be part of the change, not just part of the challenge.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I think we are in a really unique position. And hopefully the profession, the industry will look different after we're back to normal than it did before coronavirus, for sure.
Yeah, and having different conversations. We're not just talking about, well, yeah, I've got a headquarters deal and it's, you know, this thing and we're celebrating, you know, we have a bad problem in our industry anyway, and then we celebrate mega deals and then we pat people on the head and tell them, well, that other deal was good. Instead of talking about what's the impact we're having on people's lives and what are the change we're making and are we bringing up, you know, we always talk about incomes rising, but are we really looking at poverty rates? Mm-hmm. And what's happening there? And you know, we just don't talk about it.
Yeah.
And we've got to create a world where we talk about those things too.
True. It's a process. Not something that's going to happen overnight, but I'm hopeful that it does. Really, I am.
Yeah. No, me too. I know it will, because I've never met an economic developer yet who didn't want to create great things for everyone, and we're going to do that. So. Let me ask a personal question. So not that these haven't been, but as a leader, your tank gets empty. You know, you're exhausted. How do you know that you need to stop and rest? And how do you recharge and rest your total soul? Not just sleeping and taking care of your body, but how do you make sure your mind's sharp? How are you feeding the machine? And what can others learn from that?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that's been really crazy about this whole process of working from home is that my team and probably lots of folks on your team feel like they're working harder than they ever have before. It was fortunately, we were missed by Hurricane Laura in the Houston region last week, but the office closed when the storm's path was still headed towards the city. So on Wednesday afternoon, we shut down and, you know, the office wasn't opening again until Monday morning. And so I think the first thought was, yes, we get a couple of days off. But then as we talked as a team about what the rest of the week was going to look like, everyone was like, awesome, I can catch up on these items that I haven't been able to, you know, finish tackling because things have been so busy. And I think that that's okay. I mean, I'm happy that the team is encouraged and enthused. And I, too, wanted to take advantage of those couple days to get some work done that had just kind of been floundering. But there was also a point at which I said, okay, like, this isn't good, right? Like, turn off the email, put the phone down, and just, you know, take a minute to step away and clear your mind so that when you go back to work on Monday morning, you can be sharp and you can continue to formulate ideas about how to be as effective and successful in this circumstance as you would be if you were working in an in-person space and everything were normal. And I think it's okay to allow yourself to do that because, you know, just like I said before, we're all people. This situation is totally new for all of us. I mean, none of us have lived and worked through a pandemic before. It's not like any one of us should be feeling the pressure of solving all of the problems related to the coronavirus and meeting our metrics. I mean, this is just a completely foreign territory. And so being realistic about that is, I think, one of the ways that I try to remind myself that it is okay to unplug and unwind a little bit. And I would say that I haven't had a green thumb, but I've discovered that like hardier plants that don't really flower or bloom, I can keep them alive fairly successfully. So I've been gardening a little bit. I have potted some plants that are living quite successfully. And then I did some gardening actually in the ground over the weekend. And, you know, it was hot and it was hard, but it was a way for me to put my mind and my energy into something that totally required like all of my thought and focus. And I also tend to attract bugs. And so I had to be on the alert the whole time. Like there was no time for me to dig holes because I had to, you know, swat and duck and weave and all that stuff. So that's a pretty good distractor for me.
That's awesome. You know, this exhaustion is real. I was on McKinsey has been the consulting firm has been doing a lot of really great webinars on kind of COVID related issues. And one of the analogies they had a few weeks ago was that COVID now feels work-wise like you're in the ocean swimming and you can't see any land. There's no boats around you. You know you're moving. You know you're swimming, but you don't know if you're going forward. You don't know if you're succeeding. There's no validation. So the recommendation was you have to drop buoys in the water. You have to create times where everybody comes and checks in and revalidates. Here's what we're doing. That's beyond just a, hey, let's all check in here, but where people are talking about this, the process, the same things they do at the water cooler, only now you're doing it with your team. Because if you don't, then people are exhausted. They don't know what they're succeeding. And there's the story of the, you know, all these swimmers that cross the English Channel. And it's not the swim that gets them the distance, it's the fog that they can't see the other side. And they end up quitting, you know, 100 yards away because they thought they weren't getting anywhere and they were almost to the finish line. So I think for me, that's been with our team, just reminding people we are doing great things. We are making, you know, way and hitting milestones, even though you can't count it by ribbon cuttings and groundbreakings anymore.
I think, too, one of the things that I've realized, even observing the executives at the partnership, you know, I'm counted as an officer, but there are executives as well, is that it's really helpful when they demonstrate the ability to take a break. And so I've tried to do that for my team as well. I mean, I think no one wants to be the first person to tap out, but if they see you as their leader or their guide saying, you know what, I need this time and I'm going to take it and everything's going to be okay, then the team that works to support you is more likely to say, she did it. Okay, I can do it too. So,
you know, it's interesting. I wrote in my last book about Pepsi Australia, and they have a rule there called leaving loudly. So the executives are required to say, I'm going to the gym now, and let everybody around them know that I'm going to the gym, or I'm going home because my kid has a track meet. But you leave loudly so others know that they have permission to leave.
Nice.
And so it's that same idea. If you don't model behavior, then it's not going to be modeled.
Yeah.
So you really do have to do that.
Wrote that down.
So, yeah. So it's uniquely you where you can buy wherever books are sold there.
Yeah. Okay. So, got it.
And it's, being the good author that I am, with the books behind you that I'm trying to hawk. Hey, you got to sell what you
can sell. That's right. No shame.
That's right. Not one bit. If you don't toot your own horn, nobody will know you can play music.
There you go.
So, Bethany, thanks for being with us, man. I really appreciate it. It's been great. And I so appreciate your continued leadership. And you truly are one of America's great economic developers. And I'm glad you're my friend.
Well, I appreciate you. And I'm so glad that I was able to participate. And thank you.
Thanks. We'll see you soon.
Hey, everyone. I'm here today with Steve Jast, who is the president and founder of Research on Investment and Gazelle AI. Hey, Steve, it's great to speak with you today. As one of the leading voices in investment attraction and lead generation, what has stuck out the most for you over the past few months?
Hi, Faye. Thanks so much for the question. First and foremost, let me say that I love the content that Consultant Connect has been generating. I'd also like to take a second to wish all of our listeners continued good health. Every day is really a new adventure. We're seeing some sad stories of industries and companies in steep, unexpected decline, and we're also seeing areas of growth and opportunity. A couple of areas that have generated significant strategic discussion center around supply chain and reshoring. To help economic developers blend these into their strategic plans moving forward, we've been providing complementary data pools and access to our Gazelle AI platform.
That's really awesome, Steve. I'm sure this data has helped many economic development organizations. Can you explain how exactly Gazelle AI helps?
Sure. Yeah, great question, Faye. Our platform includes supply chain data for over 900 industries with related company listings. We also have complete company hierarchies, meaning users can build lists of companies that have an HQ in a specific state or country with manufacturing activities in other specific countries. This is ideal for economic recovery planning, reshoring business attraction strategies, understanding local supply chains, and overall investment attraction.
Wow, thanks, Steve. Hey, everyone, if you would like to activate your complimentary access to Gazelle AI, connect with Steve by emailing him at Steve, STEVE, at gazelle.ai. That's Steve at gazelle.ai. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Tune in again next week for more insight and relevant content to the issues impacting economic development today. America's Jobs Team podcast is sponsored by Research on Investment and Gazelle AI.